This is our interview that we did with Peter Fonda, son of Henry Fonda, brother of Jane Fonda, and a great actor, producer, director in his own right. He was up for an Academy Award for his movie Yuli's Gold. Of course, he was an award winner for Easy Rider. And we talked to him about Yuli's Gold. We talked to him about his dad. And you'll hear in this interview, he gets very emotional about the last time he spoke with his father. Here's our interview with Peter Fonda.
We're scouring the Stan and Haney archives, and we've come up with over 20 years of broadcasting gold. Stan and Haney, the interviews, 1997 to 2019. Uncut and unedited. Hear music icons, Hollywood legends, sports Hall of Famers, politicians, and historical figures.
Oh, God. Here we go again.
All interviewed by Stan and Haney over the past 22 years. A new podcast every week. Get all the information and check out the latest archive podcast at 96krock.com and the K-Rock mobile app.
We've been saying all along, and Peter, you'll be honest in saying this too. A lot of times you've been introduced as the brother of, the father of, the son of. But boy, oh boy, what a hell of a job and what a hell of a year you've had. Peter Fonda's on the phone. Hi, Peter.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Dan, it's been one of the great rides of my life.
It has to be.
And I'll tell you the truth, it happened when I first read and closed the pages of Victor Nunez, who's a Floridorian.
Yeah,
I know you guys call them Floridians, but I call them Floridorians just to make fun. Since I read that script in early 96, up to this very moment, I knew it would do what it did. In fact, I can now say I closed that script. I was very emotionally involved with it. In the first read, I looked up at the ceiling of my log cabin, and I said, I'd like to thank the members of the Academy. And it sounds egotistical, but I knew that if I did that part and nailed it, and if everyone else in the movie did their part and nailed it, that I'd have that chance to be a nominated actor. I've been nominated for a writer, for Easy Rider.
Exactly.
Nominated as an actor. And that's, I mean, throw in the Golden Globe and the New York Film Critics Award and so forth. It's just been a tremendous time. Actors get such rejection during their careers. No matter how good or bad they are, they get just total rejection. These moments of acceptance are delicious.
Are they delicious, though? I mean, you've heard the stories, of course, being nominated for Best Actor in an Academy Award. I mean, holy geez, but these award ceremonies, people say that they're such a drag.
Well, I was having a blast. First of all, I had front row seats.
Yeah.
Second of all, I was with my beautiful daughter and my wife and Eric Stoltz, my daughter's boyfriend, and my sons, my daughter-in-law, who's going to make me a real grandfather in a couple of months here.
You just had to be proud as pie.
I was. And you know, I was thrilled for Jack. It's not as if, you know, people say, what was it like to be up against your old pal Jack? I said, well, I don't think we're against each other. We're all up here together.
Yeah, but he's got three already, Peter. He's got three.
Well, that's fine. And next time, if we're up there together, I'll say my turn. But, you know, his movie was nominated as a movie. The director was nominated. The supporting actor was nominated. The actress was nominated. And the screenplay was nominated, you know. Ours was just this little film made in northern Florida, and we didn't have all that big punch. So it's not like Jack and I both played Hamlet, and he blew my socks off.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy for Jack. I was thrilled for Robin Williams. I mean,
absolutely
thrilled. So few times do we honor our funny men, even when they're doing serious roles, because we don't think of them in that manner. And Robin is a really fine actor and a great entertainer.
And I noticed when Jack came up, I mean, you guys have been friends a long time. He gave you your propers up there.
I mean, was that something? A billion people saw him saying, my old biker buddy here, I love you, Fonda.
Just
how about that?
Fonda.
I love you, Fonda, goes out to the world. I'm a winner. This is wonderful. I'm feeling great. You know, life is grand. And whoever said it's winning is everything, and those people who say nominating is enough, they haven't got it right. Being nominated is a pure honor because we're nominated by our fellow actors.
Well, I mean, forget the awards, because as you were saying earlier, I mean, it's a fantastic story, and yes, you did nail that part, and you've got a piece of work that's going to last a long, long time.
You bet. I could be proud of that for the rest of my life, and I'm thrilled with that idea.
You know, explain this to me if you can, because even, and we're going to talk a little bit about your book and some of the reviews that I was reading of Yuli's Gold and some of the comments made by your wife, but she said, or you were describing when you and your wife were watching the film,
yeah.
And she said, I didn't see Peter Fonda up there. I saw Yuli up there. I saw the actor, and that it was really a breakthrough for you in your acting career.
Well, I don't know.
That you finally got it. There's your wife saying, I don't see Peter up there.
Well, actually, it was even more wonderful than that. In fact, Victor Nunez, who wrote it, directed it, who operated the camera, produced and edited the film. What a guy. He lives in Tallahassee. He sent me a scratch track of VHS, scratch track video. This means the sound wasn't really melded well. There wasn't all the complete soundtrack in. There were no credits, no titles, no opticals, you know, none of that stuff. It was a real rough cut on tape. And we were watching it, and even though it was a rough cut and there was not good sound and all, at the end she went, oh, I said, what? She said, I forgot I was watching you.
Yeah.
Now, that's the best review I've ever had.
Oh my God, that's the ultimate compliment to any actor when you don't realize that it's the actor, that you are so into the part that you know, they just have no idea.
Did that part?
She's been intimate with me for more than 23 years.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Did the part come easily to you, or was it a lot of work to keep that going?
Well, it took a lot of work just to do it right, but the part came very easily to me. In fact, when I read it, it was right there. You know, I was so into it. I understood this character. I understood his difficulties. I understood that we had to get him back into the real world so he could take care of his family. I understood it so well. There wasn't a bit of mystery in that script. It was all there on the page. It was so wonderful.
What with the success of that movie? And I know you're in a TV special. You just finished a TV special, did you not?
Yeah, for Showtime, I'm in The Passion of Ayn Rand with Helen Mirren, who's a fantastic actor, and Eric Stoltz, my daughter's boyfriend, and Julie Delphi. We're in the biography by Barbara Brandon called The Passion of Ayn Rand, and I play Frank O'Connor, her husband, Ayn Rand's husband. And it was a blast, and I think is directly related to the performance I was able to give in Yuli's that got me into this performance, which is, you have a lot less to do, but you have a lot more to say.
Phone's got to be ringing off the hook, though, after Yuli's.
Yeah, but some of them are pretty dumb.
Yeah, sure.
But at least it's ringing.
Now,
was it your part in Escape from L.A. that got you considered for Yuli's Gold?
Not at all. That was a good one, though. No, fortunately, they had... Well, I don't fortunately. I had a blast working with John Carpenter, you know, and Kurt Russell's a pal. So that was a lot of fun, too. But what it was that helped me, I think, was another performance I had done on an earlier show. And it was when I was the last actor they saw.
You know, it seems like this film was destined almost before it was even started, because we talked to Sam Gowan when the thing was still being shot.
Yeah.
And he said, this is going to be something special.
It is.
Yeah, and I believe we even said to Sam at the time, you know, we've been trying to get Peter on, and we just can't get him on.
Well, when I'm working, I am running silent and deep. Long, low-wave radio signals are the only way to get to me. You know, when I'm not working, but I'm in the business of show business, I say I'm at periscope depth. Right? When I was in Yuli's Gold, I was in it all the way. Well, I mean, when we break for the day, I was Peter, and I'd come back to see my wife on the beach there on St. George Island. It was fabulous. I'm on Victor to shoot more movies there. I mean, I'll be a crap service for Victor Nunez. This man is so cool. And everybody, as a matter of fact, the entire crew, Sam, everybody was so good. I walked into a company, and that's a wonderful feeling. The group was already there. They're all together with Victor, and it made it a pleasure to work that entire shoot.
All right, I got to talk about Stoltz, Eric Stoltz, the boyfriend. You get along with the guy, all right? You haven't had to pop him in the mouth or anything, have you?
I wouldn't think of doing that. He's very smart, very funny, and we share many good jokes in life.
All right, I'm just checking. Because
he never does that, are you talking to me on a cell phone gag, does he?
No, but I do know how to, if somebody's called me and I've got to get them up... I'm breaking up. I can't hear you.
You know, they occasionally on the movie channels, and they went through a run probably about a month ago of showing Easy Rider again. And, you know, if you look back at that film, it's 1969. It's a wonderful motion picture for that period of time. But I am telling you, if you haven't seen the movie in a long time, that ending is still the biggest shock. I mean, you sit there with your jaw hanging open.
That was the first thing I wrote.
No kidding.
I was in Toronto, Canada, and I came up with the ending first and then backed up to serve as the ending. And when I got the story so it had a beginning, a middle, and an end, I called Dennis. I said, listen to this. I want you to direct it. I'll produce it. We'll both write it and act in it. That's how it all got started.
You know, and it is hitting a whole batch of new people that have not seen the film. In the past couple of weeks, I can count 5, 6, 7 people, friends of mine, that have said, you know, I've seen Easy Rider, bits and pieces of it, but I finally got to sit down and watch the whole thing.
Yeah, it was on VH1.
Yeah.
A lot, too.
And it's like finally a new generation of people on a film that's 29 years old getting to watch this thing again. And, yeah, it was that's a heavy film.
Oh, well, you can imagine if stepping out of the monumental shadow of being Henry Fonda's son, you know, stepping out of the monumental shadow my father cast, I had no idea what a terrible job I'd do for myself when I created Captain America. I mean, nobody's that cool, you know. That was
that's the ultimate
the
cool
part I wrote. But man, around the world, people are saying, you know, hey, Captain America, hey, Easy Rider. Now, I don't think they're going to start yelling across the street, hey, Yuli, but that's fun too.
Well, Yuli wouldn't answer them anyway.
Yeah, Yuli would just go, mm.
I got to talk to you. We just got, just today, as a matter of fact, your book. Has this hit bookshelves yet?
Yeah, it has.
What a fantastic title, Don't Tell Dad.
Translates into every language I can imagine.
Oh, and reading the little brief on it that they had sent me, you wrote this all yourself. There's no ghostwriter. There's no one that you co-wrote this thing with. You sat down and pounded out every word on this thing.
Oh, as I say in the book, from my fingertips to your eyeballs.
And just reading excerpts from this book, I told Haney, I says, I got to take this book home and read it. The excerpts... What a life. What an up and down life. People that immediately think you come from such a life of privilege, which you don't deny, but the hell that was going on behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah, you know, and to tell you the truth, one of the sweetest things is learning that it's in the detail that people can identify. When I did the excerpts, or when they did the serialization of the excerpts or whatever for... People magazine,
mm-hmm.
The young man who interviewed me said to me when we first met, you know, my mother told me the same thing about salt on a bird's tail. And he said, I just finally filed it away that some chemical reaction had to work with the feathers and they wouldn't work. It wasn't until I read your book that I realized it was a euphemism, it was a metaphor, you know. And I thought, wow, there's a guy who has a totally different upbringing than me. He's quite a bit younger than I, and he finds something to connect to in the book. And I think that's what makes this book successful now, that it's not just a privileged upbringing and Hollywood life and the glamorati of being an actor and an entertainer and knowing the different people and meeting the different people I've been privileged to meet. Though that's there to make it interesting, it's what happens inside to the person himself and to my sister. It's what happened to us as children and as grown-ups that people identify with and that they can say, that happened to me too.
Yeah, you talk in the book about how difficult it was to get through to your father and how to communicate with him because he masked so much of his emotions at home, and you know the controversy with your sister during the Vietnam War and the controversies that you had throughout your life. We know through On Golden Pond and what Jane had said that she finally mended her ways with her dad. You talked briefly, or probably quite a bit in the book, that you too finally mended your ways with your dad shortly before he died.
Oh, even more than shortly before he died. It began when he went to work for me. I was directing and acting in a movie called Juana Nevada, and I got him to play one day. And... And he wrote me a letter a week later, and it was just a fabulous letter in which he said I was a very good director and that he loved me very much.
Yeah, and
it was so tender, and I decided I was going to get him to say that to me to my face and my eyeballs. I pulled that off. And, you know, at the end of his life, and I hate to use buzzwords like closure, but it was more than you could imagine to be in the room with him. And he gained consciousness. He looked at his wife, Shirley. He looked at Jane, opening and closing his eyes like he's trying to find focus. He looked at Tom Hayden, Jane's husband at that time. And then he looked at me, and both eyes popped open, and he said, "I want you to know, son, I love you very much."
Wow.
He put his head down and died.
Whew.
Now, you can't ask. Forget about cleaning the slate. The slate's gone.
Wow.
Nothing there. I mean, I carry him in my heart with me. And all through the run for Yulee's Gold, I mean, even when I started making the picture, I have the only thing I have of his personals I have in my hand right now. It's his gold watch that he wore, and then he stopped wearing when it broke, but I got it fixed. I've been keeping this with me because I've been having my father with me on the trip. So you can imagine from the difficulties that I had and Jane had with him when we were babies to the moment today where I'm holding this watch and feeling he's here with me.
Part of that, though, comes with your maturity, too, as you're getting older and understanding a little bit more, don't you think?
Well, a lot of it had to do with understanding that we only knew five stories about him, and nobody ever spoke anything else. So we had to understand that he didn't hate us when he wasn't talking to us. We thought, what had we done wrong? In fact, it was like, what did you do? I didn't do anything. What did you do? You know, because he was up there very angry. Or he seemed, his demeanor was very angry. And it was because there he was at a table of people who demanded that he be a father, you know, a husband.
Yeah.
Somebody in an emotional way. If he were to sit next to either of you guys and on a bus and going someplace, just imagine, and you made mention, you don't know that it's him, or maybe you do.
Uh-huh.
Say, you know, I'm having a hell of a time. I've got to build a compost pit for my wife, and he'd chew your ear off for 2.5 hours about how to build the pit properly, what to use, and how to do it. I mean, he knew how to talk. It wasn't that. It was that he didn't know how to relate to the people who needed his relation the most.
You, Haney was telling me watching, because he just saw the movie Yulee's Gold last night, and he can reiterate it more than I can, but saw a lot of your dad, the way that you acted in that role, saw a lot of your dad in that picture.
Well, that's a compliment. Physically, of course, there is the last thing we know of him from really on Golden Pond. And there he was with his downturned mouth, his grizzled kind of face, and his wire-rimmed glasses. And that is the persona that one sees. But to be told that the style of acting is like his style of acting, what a compliment.
I mean, you
said...
Yeah,
well, and I want to let people know, if you haven't seen this movie, you need to, it's out on video now. Go get it.
Yeah, that's right.
And another thing I wanted to totally off the subject, and we've been talking about a lot of deep things, but I saw Bridget this past weekend on the Larry Sanders Show. It was hilarious.
Rats.
Do you know what she did?
No.
It was just a quick cameo. She's backstage with Shandling as Larry Sanders talking about going on the Larry Sanders Show. She says, "I'm so nervous. I'm afraid I'm going to screw up." And he says, "Well, what are you afraid you're going to screw up? You're just going to promote your movie." She says, "I'm afraid I'm going to cuss." And then he says, "Well, what are you afraid that you would say?" And then she lets out like a couple of lines like a sailor. And he says, "Don't worry about it."
That's my daughter.
Yeah. I also, you know, in your book, because I immediately had to open up the book and start reading it, the little beginning of the book, the little foreword or the little where you are in Jane's kitchen.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you're kicking around the idea of what would you think about, I've been approached about my memoirs.
Yeah.
And that story right there is hilarious.
It's hysterical.
It's
exactly. Except Jane said to me, "I didn't stutter that much." But she did. I cut down on the amount of stutters to make her happy. I'm either cursed or blessed with an incredible memory for detail. It was hysterical for me. And then I realized, oh, what a trip to put my sister through. I didn't have a book deal. I just didn't want to say I had nothing else going after the film in Africa.
And then lo and behold, this comes to be Don't Tell Dad, a fantastic title. And just immediately, as soon as you open up that book, it grabs you.
And you know something? Because she remembers, of course, that dinner that evening.
Uh-huh.
That was 1986. In 1989, she and I were at an Orvis fly fishing school near here. She wanted to learn how to outfish Ted. And so we're out there. I'm just getting rid of some bad habits because I love fly fishing. So I'm out there with her and being with her because she was going through the whole divorce thing and being alone all in her life. And she's my sister, and I adore her. But she turned to me, and she said, you know, you ought to call it Don't Tell Dad.
So she had kind of a little about-face from the previous conversation of 86.
Well, she realized that I wasn't going to be saying something that was terrible.
Right.
That I, in fact, I would be saying the truth. And when she realized that what I was doing was taking all the tough stuff and making it as funny as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some tough stuff that I couldn't make
sure.
funny. But in order to get the laughter, you have to have the valley, or in order to understand the valley, you have to have the peak, too.
Yep.
So that goes throughout the book. But I've heard a lot of people just say it's probably a daddy dearest book. And the contrary, it's not. Although I say what happened, it's not punishing my father on the page. I love my father, and you can see that throughout the book.
And I also like the thing, a nice little touch, because, you know, to the drug-conscious America out here, you do have the little disclaimer about your conversations in the book about drugs.
Oh, yeah. You know, at that time, everything was possible. It was all casual, and it was no problem. Right now, I wouldn't take any LSD. And if I smoked some pot, I'd get about zip work done. You know, I mean, we did it when we were doing Easy Rider on the campfires. I never would have tried to drive that machine, which I designed and built with five black friends from Watts. I never would have tried to make that piece of heavy machinery, you know, work. So I needed to know that the people reading the book didn't take it that I was saying, yeah, go out and try anything. I was speaking of those times
right. In
that way.
It's the 90s. You got to put that in there, Peter. You got to have that little disclaimer there.
I hate to do it, though, in terms of politically correct.
Yeah.
I did it because I knew from my heart that I didn't want somebody to say, well, I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
If that helped him, I'm going to give it a shot. Because who knows? You know, yeah, it helped me when I did only four trips. It helped me a lot. I didn't go running around in the streets looking at things blinking and moving. I was into it in a psychiatric way.
Uh-huh.
And it really did help me. But meanwhile, I just don't recommend it. Things. You don't know what you're taking. You don't know. If you take that one joint from somebody and you think, oh, what can hurt? You don't know what's in that.
That's
joint,
right.
You know. So my advice, don't start.
The book is Don't Tell Dad, and I urge everybody to go out and buy this book. And one last quick thing before you go, because we're desperately late here, Peter, but I want to ask you, now that Jane's with Ted, you guys get all the tickets to the Braves games you want?
You bet.
Peter, you're on a roll. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, you guys. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
Thank you, Peter. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're scouring the Stan and Haney archives, and we've come up with over 20 years of broadcasting gold. Stan and Haney, the interviews, 1997 to 2019. Uncut and unedited. Hear music icons, Hollywood legends, sports hall of famers, politicians, and historical figures.
Oh, God. Here we go again.
Interviewed by Stan and Haney over the past 22 years. A new podcast every week. Get all the information and check out the latest archive podcast at 96krock.com and the K-Rock mobile app.